special Public Planet coming up here in just a moment when we'll be talking with Tim DeChristopher, who has achieved environmental fame extraordinaire over the past month. We're going to find out how that has changed his life and what he did, why, and ask him some of the same questions he's been asked probably about 1,000 times by now. All this, Brian Bayhuth, also in the studio with us today, our news director.
Hello, Steve.
And all this because this guy is some sort of criminal, I understand.
No, I understand he has a significant criminal background that we want to look into here. And, you know, I would like to start by asking, you know, a lot of folks might not know what type of resource extraction you're attempting to prevent. What sort of activity are you trying to forestall?
It was the oil and gas leases that were going on in southern Utah. The BLM was trying to rush through one final auction before Bush and Cheney left office, and so they circled up some of the most beautiful areas of eastern and southern Utah and put them up on the auction block and tried to push it through and rush through the environmental impact statement, rush through public comment, all that sort of thing. And so I tried to put my foot in front of it.
So we're talking about oil wells, natural gas wells, this sort of thing?
Right.
And so here it is. I've been to these auctions, right, where the BLM auctions off land for geothermal leases and grazing allotments. And, well, it's an auction, right? You sit there and you have this little paddle and, you know, here's the bid on this land and sure, I'll pay that much. I have to say, it would take extraordinary courage to walk in there with all these bidders who are prepared to spend a lot of money and then they're going to go in and, well, build oil wells. Take us into that room. Did folks know that you weren't going to, you had no intention of paying going in? They must not have, right?
Well, they didn't know going in, because all it took to sign up as a bidder was a driver's license. I guess one of the things that they rushed through was the bonding process for bidders. So they didn't know that I didn't have the ability to pay. I would say that I kind of stuck out in the room. I just came from a final exam at the University of Utah that morning. I came directly there. And so, you know, I was just dressed in whatever clothes I had on and was unshaven and still had my school bag over my shoulder. And most everybody else in the room was...
That sounds like an oil man to me.
Precisely. Yeah, most everybody else in the room was... a guy in their 50s with gray hair and a stack of papers and briefcases and that sort of thing. So I'd say I kind of stuck out in the room.
So, okay, you're keeping your courage, screwed to the sticking spot here. And, okay, tell us how this goes. There's a parcel that's open up for bid. There's a parcel of federal land that, if you wish, you can pay the federal government money and then build an oil well there and explore for oil. So tell us how it went, right? Here it is. How did it go when you raised your paddle for the first time? A little shaky, or were you...
It was very shaky the first time, because I really went there with the intention of making some kind of scene and just disrupting it in any way that I could. There were some protesters outside who were just holding their signs, and I knew that I wanted to do more than that, and figured I'd pretty much get thrown out by security as soon as I walked in the door, but instead they signed me up as a bidder. And once I got inside there, I saw that some kind of disruption or speech wasn't really going to have much of an effect. It's not like I was going to change the mind of any of the oil men in the room. But I saw pretty quickly that I could have a major effect with my bidder paddle. And just by bidding, I could, one, raise the prices for the oil companies and also potentially protect some of the land by winning some of those leases. I was in there for quite a while just struggling with that ethical decision, because I knew that that I'd probably go to prison if I ended up bidding without the intent to pay for it, and if I tried to stop the auction in that way.
We're speaking with Tim DeChristopher, who was arrested after bidding on some oil leases in Utah near some national parks in an attempt to keep these oil leases from being given out in the last minutes or the last days or the last weeks of the Bush-Cheney administration. And he is a special guest here this weekend of Circle. Roger Hicks, a member of Circle's board, and longtime environmental activist locally, joins us as well, Roger. And
hi, Steve.
And what the heck are you doing with this guy here when there's a perfectly good film festival this month in Park City, Utah, called the Sundance Festival?
Well,
I mean, if he's going to be cutting a movie deal, he should be there and not here.
Actually, Sundance starts next Thursday, I think. But you know, this
I don't think the Redford crowd wants me anyway.
Oh, is that who you're bucking for to play? I'm just kidding.
Yeah, well, you know, Tim, in my mind, is the perfect example of proof that one person can make a huge difference, a huge good difference. I mean, things can seem overwhelming. I mean, like Bush, Cheney, what are you going to do about that? That they're going to, you know, auction off these beautiful lands adjacent to Utah's national parks. What, you know, go to Washington, pick it in front of the White House. Well, Tim figured out a way. One person can make a huge difference. And that's basically what a lot of the films at the film festival this weekend exemplify as well. So we wanted to bring him out here. He's a young person. He's a college student. And, man, he put his neck on the line, and it mattered. It really happened.
And are there what events in particular people wanted to catch Tim this weekend? Is there an event schedule around him?
He's going to be at the Odd Fellows on Friday night. And he is, he's going to be speaking, where are we here, looking at my schedule, at about after the 7 o'clock film at the Odd Fellows. So that is, and then also on, I did not bring my schedule with me, I'm sorry to say, but after Cost of Oil, there it is, and before... after National Sacrifice Zone and before Cost of Oil, so at about 7:30 at the Odd Fellows. So if you want to hear Tim, go to the Odd Fellows tomorrow night. And then he will also be at the activist workshop on Saturday, one of the activist workshops.
Okay, so so that gives us an idea of where folks can catch Tim in person. And coming here without a film, though, Tim, you know, I mean, what the heck? This is a film festival. You know, you don't have a film to premiere. You got no DVDs to sell. I mean, I just don't know.
Well, I only got about a week or two notice. I didn't have time to pull anything together.
Well, he's a big landowner now. I mean, there's plenty of scenes for to shoot. How much land are you privy to now? I mean, might you develop the oil resources? No, seriously, how much land did you purchase leases for?
Well, I purchased the lease for about 22,500 acres of areas right around Moab, Utah. And it was just the leases for the oil and gas. The ownership of the land still stays in the hands of the BLM.
Sure. That's about 6 square miles all told. That's pretty good. That's a huge farm. Now, your neck, though, as Steve pointed out, or Roger pointed out, you're putting your neck on the line, but I think your neck still is on the line. It is a federal felony to do what you've done. What's your legal status here?
At this point, it's still kind of up in the air. I'm in this kind of limbo situation of waiting for the U.S. attorneys to press charges. I do have a great legal team behind me. The former director of the BLM under the Clinton administration, Patrick Shea, is actually leading my legal team. He's my head attorney because he strongly supports what I did. And he brought on board a couple other prominent defense attorneys from Utah. So I feel pretty confident that we can handle whatever they throw at us at this point. And we've been getting a ton of support from around the country. We've been raising money for a defense fund and also for actually paying off the leases because we've gotten so much support.
So to tie up the land. Huh, great.
Now, maybe you could just tell us a little bit about how that... We're coming up on a deadline tomorrow, I believe, for one of the things that you have to pay money on, correct?
Right. The initial payment that was due on the leases was somewhere around $45,000 and change. And so we set about raising that money last week, and we've reached that goal in our lease fund, and so we're prepared to make that payment. We're basically just waiting for the BLM to confirm that they will actually receive that payment and that they'll still accept it.
So in other words, at this point, if I gave you $1,000, can I go out and drill for oil? Would that be okay?
You could camp.
Camp, I see. Yeah. Or grow or an organic garden, perhaps.
We'd let you walk around and say that you're looking for oil.
That's a good idea. All right. Yeah. And maybe just to mention briefly where some of the websites are where people can get more information about your legal situation and about the fundraising that's going around it.
The main site is bidder70.org. That's BIDDER70. That was my bidder number. My paddle was number 70. So that's the main website that is kind of a clearinghouse for all the information about the auction, about my story, and is also taking donations. There's another blog called oneutah.org, and the Center for Advocacy, the Center for Water Advocacy out of Moab, is the nonprofit organization that's actually raising the funds. It's actually receiving the donations from everyone.
Looking at there was a Salt Lake Tribune article that Amy Goodman mentioned when she was talking to you a week or so ago, and quoting from it, I just think this is wonderful. He didn't pour sugar into a bulldozer's gas tank. He didn't spike a tree or set a billboard on fire, but wielding only a bidder's paddle, a University of Utah student just as surely monkey-wrenched a federal oil and gas lease sale on Friday, ensuring that thousands of acres near two southern Utah national parks won't be opened to drilling anytime soon.
Isn't that fantastic? I mean, really. But, you know, it's no violence, nobody was hurt, nothing was destroyed, and land is protected.
And he's giving money to the federal government.
How about that? Help the budget deficit.
If folks out there would like to talk with Tim or Roger here, you can give us a call, 265-9555 in the 530 area code, or 800-355-5867.
So let me just recover a little on that. I was a little not prepared for your question. Where can people see Steve?
See, I knew we could grill him, Brian.
incisive.
Yes. Yeah.
Let's grill the circle guy.
All right. Well, tomorrow night at the Odd Fellows. He will be at that session, which actually starts at 6:30. And it's about, there's several films about extracting natural resources. And then at the Activist Center on Saturday, that's Activist Center 2, which is downstairs at the Vet Hall, there's a workshop on clean coal, quote unquote, and the mythology of clean coal. That's at 3 o'clock. Tim will be there. And then we're still trying to work out the details, but he will be at the Nevada Theater tomorrow evening, Saturday evening, for the main session there, Saturday evening at the Nevada Theater. So there you go, Steve. The second try, I get it.
Oh, well, that's good. Again, numbers to call, 265-9555 or 800-355-5867. I understand that your other activities there, besides getting a couple of the leases, when you were holding up your paddle, you probably increased bids up by about $500,000. Is that correct?
Yeah, I kind of started out somewhat tentatively when I was bidding. I was bidding pretty cautiously, making sure that I wasn't winning any leases because I knew that it was a pretty good chance I would go to prison if I actually won any leases. So I started out just getting my feet wet by driving up the prices for others and trying to drive up the cost of oil a little closer to what the true cost of developing oil is, and trying to include some of those external costs that the rest of us all pay in our tax dollars for the development of oil.
So, you know, I mean, I just want to get back to that situation where, you know, you mentioned that you looked out of place and, you know, you're not your typical oil man. But here the paddle keeps going up, right? Oh, man, this guy's got money to burn. Were you getting some crossways looks? I mean, what was the mood in the room, at least toward you?
Yeah, I was getting quite a few dirty looks or questioning looks from people around the room. And there was some muttering from some guys behind me that I kept driving up their prices. and everybody else in the room kind of seemed to know each other and have some connection and have seen each other at auctions in the past. And I think just the way that I was bidding was kind of out of style, that it was a way of bidding that they weren't used to. I think a lot of people figured out what was going on. And I really wasn't trying to be subtle. My point there was to disrupt the auction. So I was trying to make it as clear as possible that I was there to do that. Once I started winning parcels, I actually won about 12 in a row where I just didn't lower my bid card.
You were on a roll. Huh?
I just kept it up in the air and refused to lower my card. So it was obvious to everybody in the room, and that's why they eventually stopped the auction and took me out.
Oh, so you were arrested right there. It wasn't later that they figured out and said, hey, okay, well, now you owe us $1.8 million.
No, it was obvious enough that they stopped the auction and some BLM law enforcement agents came and asked me to step out of the room.
And then they asked you about your intention, and you just fessed up, right? I mean, you were
honest. I told them exactly what I was doing, that I was there to disrupt that auction. I told them that I thought it was a fraudulent auction against the American people and that it hadn't been given the due process that it deserves, and also that it was a threat to my future and that we had to start keeping oil in the ground one way or another if we were going to have a chance for a livable future, and that everything that we've been doing in the environmental movement for the past 20 years hasn't been enough to get us to that point, and so we need more serious action.
And we have a caller. Hi, you are live on KVMR Radio.
Hi. Thank you for putting this program on, and thank you so much for taking this action. And it's this type, I just need to, want to make a statement that this type of innovative, intuitive, and out-of-the-box type of thinking and action that we really need. The old things just don't seem to be working for us anymore, the protests and stuff like that. But just taking seizing the moment and intuitively going with what you felt was right to monkey wrenches, that's great. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thanks for the call. You can join the conversation as well, 265-9555 in the 530 area code, or 800-355-5867. It's your chance to talk to a real criminal. Yeah, just think of what this guy did. I guess one thing I was going to say too is maybe at first they thought you were some of these guys, the oil executives, were going, wait, is that Charlie's son? You know, the guy from Exxon or something, like, you know, maybe they thought that you were the rising young executive and they just hadn't met you yet. Do you think that might be? Although again, the way you were dressed does not sound like you were trying to make an oil executive mark, I guess.
No, I think they thought that I was probably there to yell something or make some speech or throw things at people. And probably once I started bidding, they were like, oh, good, he's not going to throw anything.
Press your shoes,
bid.
Yeah.
Couldn't get my shoes off fast enough.
Well, I mean, I just try to think, did you think in terms of courage? Like, wow, I've got to stay here. I've got to keep raising this paddle. And, were your palms sweating? Were your brow, struggling to keep it together maybe?
At the beginning I was, when I was really struggling with that choice of should I take this action, knowing that I'll probably go to prison. And that was a big struggle for me. And it was kind of an emotional struggle. And it basically came down to me asking myself if I do this and I stand in the way of this auction and worse comes to worse and I end up in prison for a few years, could I live with that? And I said to myself, yeah, I can live with that. It would suck, but I could live with it. But after seeing this opportunity to make a difference and seeing the potential to protect this land and to keep some oil in the ground and give us a better chance for a livable future, if I turn my back on that opportunity, could I live with that? And I thought, no, I can't live with that, especially once things start to get ugly down the road and we're facing the catastrophic consequences of climate change, I don't ever want to have to live with knowing that I had an opportunity right in front of me to do something about it and I didn't take that opportunity.
You're listening to a special edition of Public Planet today with Tim DeChristopher, the University of Utah student who foiled a federal oil and gas lease auction back in December, getting some of the bids, driving up some of the bids, and then getting some of the oil leases himself, and later was arrested for that. And you can join the conversation as this person is by calling 265-9555 in the 530 area code. Hi, you're live on KVMR.
Hi, I think you could be wrong about him not having a film. You just let the synergy of people film him, the Youth Film Project film, and it'll be shot Sunday.
Well, actually, John, this is Roger, and that is exactly what we have planned.
You guys are so great, I can't believe it. I think this KVMR is as great a hero here. I think this to get this done right away, I'm so proud of KVMR.
Absolutely. Community radio at its best.
Yeah, so totally proud of him. I I once ran up $100,000 of credit cards when I didn't have the money. It turned out I only had to pay back about $20,000 of it to save some of the earth. So I understand the risks that are involved.
This is John Olmsted, who himself has saved thousands of acres of beautiful, pristine land and put it in the public trust.
And we thank you very much for your call, John.
Well,
in fact, you can say hello to the a generation or two down from what we are.
I'm going to meet him, and I hope he sees my photo exhibit in the foundry.
Yeah, I'll make sure I look for it.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
Yes.
And that photo exhibit, part of the Circle Film, the Wild and Scenic Environmental Film Festival that Tim is here to visit.
Yeah, and what John was mentioning is we have part of the film festival is. We have a young filmmakers workshop where 16 high school kids from the area, from the region actually, have come up for a couple days of training on how to use cameras, and then they're going to start making a film Friday morning. They're going to be interviewing Tim. They'll be filming Friday and Saturday. There's an editor that's going to put that together into a finished product, and that will be shown on Sunday. We have a lot of other events going on this weekend, too, Steve.
That I can imagine, but I'm just thinking, I just figured this out now, okay? So he sells the rights to his life story to you guys mm-hmm. for $45,000.
Right. Uh-huh.
And then he's got the money to pay for the leases.
There you go. That's it.
Win-win.
Yeah. However, we are, you know, a non-profit in this era of recession, and so I don't know that.
I see a couple limousines pulling up outside. Of course,
right.
They're hybrid limousines.
Yeah, right.
But there may be some film executives waiting there to outbid you, Roger, mm-hmm. for...
I know. Have you... Tim was telling me before he's had, like, 6 interviews in the past couple of days, including this morning at the airport from the London Times. TV, radio, and press. So I was wondering, has anyone offered to buy the film rights yet?
No, I haven't gotten any offers for that yet.
All right, well.
Maybe this weekend.
This weekend, right.
Do have another caller. Hi, you are live on KVMR.
Yeah, is it Tim? Is that his name?
Tim.
Timmy, I want to congratulate you what you did. That took so much incredible courage.
Thank you.
And the thing that I just went through 6 years of fighting in court, and I want to say, you know, it's like whatever you would do in this country, it seems now that would be a patriotic thing. There's always a felony that comes along with it. You know, if you're doing something really good for the people, there's somebody out there that's going to say, you've committed a felony. So, but congratulations. I think what you did was the smartest move. And you know what? I'm not a heavy religious person, but I'd say God was right behind you.
Well,
that
thank
was a
you.
Good thing that you did. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call. 265-9555 in the 530 area code. That's the number that you can call. Speak with Tim DeChristopher. I was going to just say, I think I read this somewhere, too, and somebody was saying that there shouldn't be any charges whatsoever against Tim, because why did they give him a paddle? Mm-hmm. It would seem that the Bureau of Land Management ought to have a way that they assure that everybody that gets one of these paddles to bid is, quote, legitimate.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you could tell that story that you were telling me, but...
They normally do, that's what I've learned since then from my lawyer, Patrick Shea, who used to run these auctions when he was the BLM director, is that under his tenure, they made sure that all the bidders were bonded ahead of time, and that was standard procedure. But I guess when you're trying to rush an auction through before a new administration comes in, you don't have time for that kind of thing, along with environmental impact statements and public comment. It's not enough time for that.
Sounds like stumbling a little bit, running too fast, maybe. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you know, this type of intervention, if you looked for, you know, I mean, I think about the logic of this, and, you know, you mentioned the typical sort of protest. It's oftentimes not effective. You can stand out in front of that auction and have a sign, and mm-hmm. nothing will change, right? Folks will come in, they'll buy the oil leases, and they'll put the oil wells where they buy the leases. But mm-hmm. do you know, have you had time to think about how this could be extrapolated, right? I don't want to let the cat out of the bag, but, you know, are there other opportunities to foil this type of extractive resource use?
Well, I think they're probably going to start locking down their auctions pretty quick. So
I would say, yeah.
that people can't do exactly what I did again. But, I mean, I do think that there are a huge amount of people in this country who really do value the land and value the climate as much as I do. And I think we probably value that more than oil companies value their oil. And I think that we can pull our money to bid in these auctions in the future to legitimately purchase the land and protect it. You know, some of these leases were going for an incredibly low amount. The first parcel that I bought was $2.25 an acre to destroy some beautiful land in Utah. So it's really appalling how cheaply we're sacrificing the integrity of our public lands.
Is this a problem now? I mean, I know in Colorado, Wyoming, coal bed methane wells are just everywhere. I mean, it's amazing the horrifying array of these wells that have popped up that are in conflict with grazing allotments as well as recreational areas. Is this a problem in Utah that you were aware of that exists now?
The coal bed particularly?
Or coal bed or any type of extractive resource on public land that is troubling.
Yeah, and the biggest thing that's troubling in Utah is the oil shale development that they're trying to push for, which is basically a death sentence for everyone who wants to live past the next 30 years. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous what they're trying to do with oil shale. There's no possible way to do that in a sustainable way. They either have to strip mine it,
right,
which takes a vast amount of water and leaves behind a giant toxic mess, or their supposed new and improved method of heating it up before it comes out of the ground so that they can pump it rather than strip mine it out of there. If you look at their actual plan that Shell Oil has put forth, it entails them raising a layer of earth about 1,000 foot thick over an area of several square miles up to 700 degrees and keeping it there for 3 years. I mean, so it's not even even imaginable that.
How does the math on that even work out? You know, I mean, positive.
What I've seen is it takes one large coal-fired power plant to bring out about 1,000 barrels a day out of that kind of method. So what they're talking about there is pretty ridiculous.
Now this, Roger, these kind of stories. I mean, this is we've been running features all week on the evening news about upcoming films and talking to some of the producers and activists involved. This is one among, gosh, I don't know, 100 such stories that will be outlined this weekend.
It's true. I mean, as I said, Tim will be at an activist workshop at the downstairs in the Vets Hall at 2:00 on 3:00 on Saturday, and that's on clean coal. I mean, the town is going to be filled with people who care more about the environment than about oil and gas leases. It's all weekend with activists who are taking action on similar issues across the country and really across the globe.
Well, tonight on the KVMR Evening News, we'll be chatting with a fellow who is involved in the cessation or attempt to cease aerial hunting in Alaska, which recently gained some notoriety through political means or ways.
Yes. I hear Sarah is back in the helicopter.
Is that right? Well, she'd be in the film, but we're looking forward to hearing about that film. Are there a couple of stories, a couple of films that stand out for you as something that's kind of, wow, what a story? I mean, obviously Tim's story, even though he doesn't have a film.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
You know, there's some great stories behind this festival.
There are. There's one called Fighting Goliath, which is the story of the 11 coal-fired power plants that Bush wanted to build in Texas, and the story of how that was shut down. One of the people featured in that film is Laura Miller, the former mayor of Dallas, who went around to all the towns in the area, particularly the ones near where the power plants would be, and basically educated the local people. They had been given this line of bull about how this is going to provide jobs for, you know, and boost up the local economy, and she sort of gave them the truth about that and how it really wasn't going to help their local economy. In fact, it would probably ruin it, and the whole thing was turned around. So that's a film that stands out for me. The Red Gold is an excellent film that's going to be at the Nevada Theater on Saturday evening about salmon in Alaska.
I hadn't heard about that one. I mean, there's so many. I mean, how many films are being screened here?
There's about 130 films.
My word.
Many of them are premieres. You know, they're just a lot of fantastic films featuring activists and beautiful places in the earth, on the earth.
I'm new to the area. How many years has this been going on, and how's it changed and grown? It seems like it's pretty well established here with some beautiful literature, and it's highly organized.
It's incredibly, I mean.
I think, didn't Kathy have a little slideshow of a trip she took once about 8 years ago?
Yeah, that's how it started, right. Yeah. Now, this is our seventh year. We have close to 600 volunteers putting on this festival, community people that help with this. We have six venues going from Friday evening through Sunday late afternoon. And, you know, it's an incredibly complex event to put on. We have a wine stroll Saturday afternoon where, you know, you buy a ticket, you get a wine glass, you go to the various galleries in town where there's special exhibits, and some of the local wineries are there pouring their best stuff.
Always helpful.
That's a great thing. I've mentioned the activist workshops. That's going on all day Saturday. I love this town, Nevada City, because where else do the city fathers and mothers give a city hall for an activist workshop all day? And we have these radicals from all over the country. You know,
criminals, in fact.
Some criminals, yes. And the other one, the other activist center is at the Vets Hall.
Getting back to you, Tim, what did Pat Shea say when did you first contact him? Did he contact you?
He actually saw a news article online right after the auction about what I did, and he contacted me. He put a post up on a blog that was running with the story and said, I love what you did, and if you want a good lawyer and a former director of the BLM, give me a call, and had his phone number up there. And I saw that and thought, that can't be right.
Sure.
It can't be real. And then the guy who ran the blog gave me his information and said, yeah, you should really call this guy. And so I got in touch with him, and he was very strongly in support of what I did. And he's really putting his reputation on the line to defend me.
Well, now, do your lawyer? I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I can just see him. If I'm guessing him, he probably looked at this and said, "He did what? He did what?
Yeah.
Holy Toledo! Except a different word than Toledo, I think."
Yeah.
Anyway,
no, do you get the sense from your lawyers that federal prosecutors, because it sounds like it's in the hands of federal prosecutors whether they want to pursue the case or not,
mm-hmm.
do you get the sense that you will be in federal court, I guess, in Salt Lake? You probably, if you were to be tried on this,
yeah.
you'd have to go to the circuit court there, yeah?
Yeah, there's a federal court there in Salt Lake, and that's where I would be tried.
So you don't, and no idea of the intent of the prosecutors or any sort of pre-litigation chit-chat?
Nothing yet. We haven't heard hardly anything out of them.
So you still don't know. You may be prosecuted for this, yeah?
Yeah, and I kind of expect that I will be.
I don't think they know what to do with Tim, really.
It sounds like it, right? What do you do with this guy?
Yeah, apparently this is fairly unprecedented, so they're not sure how to pursue it from here.
We have another caller. Hi, you are live on KVMR.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell Tim, good job, and what a simple act. Obviously, he had a lot on the line, but, you know, it's such a simple act, and all of a sudden this complicated organization doesn't know what to do with him, you know. So
mm-hmm.
I would also like to add that, you know, you guys are talking about these corporations and these crazy things that they're doing, but, you know, there's a market for it, and you can't sell something if you don't have a buyer. So I guess the main thing is how do we stop using this stuff, you know. So anyway, thanks a lot.
Thanks for the call.
Yep.
And by the way, you can join the conversation as well, make a comment, whatever. The number is to call 265-9555 in the 530 area code, or 800-355-5867.
What, you know, to me, what's behind this for you, Tim? You know, you mentioned weighing going to jail against your concern for the environment, for the atmosphere and our climate. What is behind this? You know, I think the caller brings up a great point. You know, you probably drove up here in a car, or someone drove you up here in a car, and it mm-hmm. took gas to do it. It's What's behind your activism?
Well, of course, we do still need oil at this point. Hopefully, we won't for too much longer because we do have cleaner alternatives that we could use. But as long as we do, I think that the decisions we make about where to drill for oil and what places should be destroyed in order to get that oil should be made in an open and participatory and transparent manner. Those decisions shouldn't be made behind the closed doors of the Bush and Cheney administration by the oil companies. And that was really the crime behind this auction and why it was so fraudulent, is that people were locked out of the process and it wasn't an open and transparent kind of system.
Well, let's take a step back. What was the kernel, right? You said, okay, there are these leases coming up, right? You saw this and, I think I'll attend and bid on, you know, what's the kernel of this?
I had seen this auction since it first kind of came out about a month before it happened. And when they first announced it, you know, they had parcels up for lease in the city of Moab that had houses on them. That's how little forethought they had given to what they should put up for lease. And so some of those parcels were taken off eventually. But there was a lot
of joy of homeowners.
There was a lot of opposition to this auction from the first time that it was announced. And I basically saw it not working. I saw them getting small concessions, but the meat of it was still going on, and all their supposedly legitimate forms of standing in the way of this weren't working and weren't being effective. And that's what I've seen for a long time, that all the pathways of change that are supposed to be open to us aren't significant enough for us to put ourselves on a path for a livable future, and certainly haven't been enough to resist the exploitation of the Bush and Cheney regime.
So really, this is about transparency. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I mean, this sounds just like that. You shed a little light on a system that is in the shadows.
Yeah, I mean, for me, this auction was kind of the confluence of several issues that were going on. One was the exploitation of our public lands, and another was the climate change issue, and another was the transparent government.
And on the transparency issue, one thing that you told me was that question on your final exam, which was, I'm paraphrasing it here, but basically, if only the oil and gas companies are bidding on these leases, is the true cost of extraction really represented in the sale price?
Yeah, that was the final exam that I had about half an hour before the auction happened, and it was talking about this auction in particular. So I certainly had that in my head as I was driving up the costs of those leases, was that I was driving it a little closer towards the true cost of oil.
So you don't sound like the typical economics major, I want to be honest here, right?
I mean, and what grade did you get in that class?
I got an A in that class.
Okay. Didn't you give you an A-plus for extra credit for going to
extracurricular activities?
Maybe if the auction was before the final exam.
That's great. A thing from the Salt Lake Tribune, which I thought was sort of interesting, it says, since the Election Day announcement of the U.S. Bureau of Land Management's oil and gas lease sale, preservationists, conservationists, archaeologists, business owners, river runners, hunters, members of Congress, and a top official with the incoming Obama administration have registered objections to drilling in some of Utah's most scenic Red Rock Desert. They didn't miss a whole lot of people there.
No, I mean, Ducks Unlimited. I'm
surprised. National Park Service was another one who was opposed to this, because some of these lands were right on the border of the national parks, of Arches National Park and Canyonlands and Dinosaur. And the National Park Service hadn't even been informed of this. So they were pretty upset about it as well.
I can see it now. Marge, can we get a picture of that? It looks like an oil well, but it's got to be a natural thing here.
Is that an arch?
Arch strange.
Yeah, and notice they announced it on Election Day, too, so it could fly under the radar.
Well, it was announced that this would happen on Election Day, so this really is an 11th hour sort of behind end run to open up these areas to drilling.
Yep.
My word. Well, did you have co-conspirators? They can remain anonymous for legal protection, but did you talk about this? Did you say, hey, man, let's try this?
No. And I hadn't even really thought about it very much. I mean, in a general way, I had been building towards that level of commitment towards taking direct action or more serious action. But as far as the specifics of standing in the way of this auction, it was all stuff that came together right there on that day.
And so you really had to kind of go with it, you know. I mean, at one point, would you may have decided to say, "Well, wait a second, let me stand up and throw my shoes, or otherwise disrupt this because, raising my paddle is just weirding me out." You know, I mean, so you kind of just—it was on the fly, right? You developed this plan sitting there in some sense, yeah.
Yeah, and it really appeared very clearly in front of me that this was the one way that I could stand in the way of this auction, and it was my opportunity, and so I kind of saw it as the chance that I had been waiting for, as I'd been building that general commitment towards taking more serious action. It occurred to me, okay, this is my opportunity. I can either take it or not.
Well, you know, let's get back to your being an economics major for a second. How does this factor into it? Because, again, you don't sound like somebody who's headed to Wall Street. You don't sound like somebody who's likely to become an attorney or a business attorney, and nothing against these occupations. But it sounds like you have a different focus. Are you an undergraduate student?
Yes, I'm an undergraduate student. And ironically, the University of Utah is one of the most liberal economics programs in the country. We're one of the few that teaches anything other than neoclassical economics. So I did have a lot of professors who brought up market failures, like the external costs of producing oil. And so that was something that was actually a part of my studies. And almost all my classes talked about climate change this semester. So it's something that is getting talked about a lot in my classes. I'm certainly not going to end up on Wall Street, I don't think. and my focus in economics...
Well, see, if you ended up on Wall Street and then you went to prison, you'd go to a nicer prison.
That's true.
We're speaking with Tim DeChristopher, the Utah college student who registered as a buyer and outbid the energy companies over some scenic public lands in Utah. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 265-9555 or toll-free 800-355-5867. Tim is the guest at the Wild and Scenic Environmental Film Festival here in Nevada City this weekend. Hi, you are live on KVMR.
I'm not clear on some things. Because of what he did that mean that the auction was then over, the land was not available to be auctioned to anybody, or, you know, what happened to what he bid on? Was it open for bid to somebody else, or was it, you know, the whole auction over with because it was, you know, had to be done in a timely fashion?
Or will it be redone, right?
Yeah.
That's something that I haven't seen a lot of clear answers on. The land that I won the bids on, that 22,500 acres, that cannot be put up for auction. And that's what we're raising the $45,000 for, is to make the initial payment on that so we can secure that land it can't be put up for auction again. But there are also a lot of questions out there about the lands that I didn't win. One, the lands that I bid up the costs on, people are wondering how they're going to deal with that. Mm-hmm. And also the land after I got removed from the auction, they did continue on the auction and leased the rest of those parcels. But a lot of people had left by that point, some of whom I'm pretty sure left because I was driving up the prices and blocking their purchase of some of the leases. So some of that is still kind of up in the air, and this is apparently an unprecedented thing, so the BLM isn't quite sure how to proceed from here.
But at least it got postponed into the Obama administration and out of the Bush administration, right?
Right. At the very least, the lands that I purchased, I will either be able to protect or it'll be in Obama's court, and he'll have the opportunity to protect it.
Okay, thank you.
Good question.
Has the Obama administration offered you a position yet?
No, nothing yet.
Western liaison, land acquisitions.
Yeah. So the $45,000 you were telling me before, it did not come in one big check from the Sierra Club.
No, haven't gotten. I actually haven't gotten any support from the big green groups. All the donations have come from thousands of people across the country and actually from different parts of the world, and mostly in $10 and $20, $30 donations, just whatever people were able to give. the big green groups definitely don't support my action. Some of them have openly spoken against it in public.
It's 45,000 out of 1.7 million, right?
Yeah.
A down payment.
It's basically the right to proceed or down payment. Yeah.
Interesting. So what groups have come out against it? I'm just curious to know who would not support this action, an environmental group at least.
The Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, they distanced themselves from it immediately and spoke out against it. I think just because that they didn't want to be associated with me and they didn't want people to think that there was...
employing these tactics in their name.
Right. Then Earth Justice, which used to be the Sierra Club's legal arm, their executive director spoke out against it on the Rachel Maddow show a couple weeks ago when he was speaking about me. And his basic message was, hey, why don't you just let the professionals handle this? You know, if you want to be an environmentalist, why don't you just sign our internet petition and send in your donation so that we can hire a lawyer or a lobbyist to fight your battles for you?
Does this disillusion you to some degree? I mean, I would say I'm shocked that Earth Justice wouldn't have supported this. They seem to be certainly more active-oriented than the Sierra Club proper, and nothing against the Sierra Club, but they seem, you know, to be, I would argue, capable of this kind of thing, or hopefully.
No, it doesn't discourage me to see that, because I've seen for a while that the environmental movement is kind of dominated by those cadre-based organizations, and that they don't really engage in a lot of grassroots action. Most of that happens by the small local groups who are really willing to put themselves on the line for their local issues that they're caring about, and a lot of the big national groups aren't really willing to do that, and they've kind of got their seat at the table. You know, they've established themselves, and they have their way of creating influence, and they don't want to stand by something that's kind of controversial or push the boundaries in any way, because then they might lose their seat at the table.
It's interesting, because I see Greenpeace. It really reminds me of a Greenpeace-like action where, you know, they're mm-hmm. driving boats in front of whaling ships fishing ships generally. And then I think back to logging protests where ski resorts, for instance, would be expanding their runs. And typically it is not the larger, and thinking about it now, environmental groups that are chaining themselves to log skidders or otherwise obstructing the deforestation of, let's say, ski resorts. So I guess very interesting. Are there other groups are there any large groups that have come out in support of it?
Not really. There's some small groups around Moab, like the Red Rocks Forest Network. They've been a big supporter and have been directly helping my cause and helping me to organize. There's another small group called the Center for Water Advocacy that's actually been handling the donations. But for the most part, there haven't been any of the big groups that have offered me any support.
You know, it reminds me of...
There is actually... a group here in California, an old growth forest group, that has sent us a donation from some money that they had from a previous campaign. So they've been a strong supporter of us.
I was going to say that this reminds me of somebody who was whose name is from the state that you're from, and that is our old friend Utah Phillips, mm-hmm. Who always says direct action. You know that takes the cake. Direct action is what you need to do. He was, and this is if this isn't an extraordinary example of direct action, I don't know what is.
Mm-hmm. No, it's on the ground.
You know, participating with the powers that be. In the middle of this.
Yeah, and Utah actually has a strong history of that. I mean, first in Edward Abbey, kind of our folklore history there with monkey ranching, and also the IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World, had a big presence there in Utah, and Joe Hill was actually put to death about three blocks from where my house is now. He was one of the leaders of the IWW, and their motto was "Direct action gets the goods."
That's, mm-hmm. Well, that's exactly
that's it.
A Utah lifelong member of the IWW, among other things.
Catholic workers too in Utah.
Indeed, mm-hmm. We do need to wrap things up, and we want to thank you folks for stopping by today, Roger. Just a real quick summary of the festival.
We have plenty of tickets left. Come down. The town is going to be filled with people from small environmental groups who do direct action, and that's why we brought Tim out here. You can see Tim at the Oddfellas on Friday night, Nevada Theater, Saturday night and at the Activist Center at 3 p.m. at the Vets Hall downstairs. Come on out. It's a great festival. The town fills up with people who love the earth and want to do something about protecting it.
And you've been listening to KVMR FM Nevada City with translator K286 AN serving Truckee at 105.1 FM. Thanks very much, Brian, for being here as well. And Tim and Roger, we also get support from Planet Solar, providing renewable energy sales and service using sunshine, wind, and water to meet local power needs. Their specialties include on-site consultations, financial cost benefit analysis, and guidance from education to installation. www.planitsolar.com. 530-432-3776. And Courtney J. Cook, Fine Home Building, a custom green sustainable home builder offering services from design to site work to finish, including new construction, additions, and remodels, plus assistance for owner builders. Courtney J. Cook, Fine Home Building, 530-575-5139 or cjcfinehomebuilding.com. I see I have one person on hold here, and I'm just going to let them make one brief comment, and then we will be heading directly to the flea market. Hi, you're live on KVMR.
Thanks for squeezing me in. Tim, thank you for what you did. Since you mentioned you're a student of economics, I just wondered if you'd like to make any comment about what's going on with the bailouts. Obama voted for this huge bailout, which it goes to executive salaries and so forth. Now he's proposing more than $1 trillion more. There's no accountability. Bloomberg News is suing, and the Federal Reserve doesn't want to tell us anything. As a student of economics, do you have any comment on that?
Yeah, I haven't been very encouraged by that. To me, it seems like what our leaders are trying to do is to get us to that back to that point of right before things fell apart. So that they can happen again.
Thanks.
Thanks for the call.
Bye.
The flea market is next here on KVMR FM, Nevada City.